This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seevilletomorrow.org.
What tools do communities in Virginia have for managing growth, and are they effective? A diverse panel of experts addressed these questions at a discussion held at the Senior Center on May 24, 2007. The event was moderated by Morris Saar, a former chairman of the Fairfax County Planning Commission who now lives in Charlottesville. The panelists on the event are Morgan Butler of the Southern Environmental Law Center, Frank Cox, president of the Cox Company, Jack Marshall, president of Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population, and Stephen Blaine, an attorney for LeClaire Ryan and a member of the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce's Board of Directors.
I'd like to introduce over, John isn't here yet, Stephen Blaine and Jack Marshall, Frank Cox, and Morgan? Yes. As a matter of fact, these fine people that are here tonight, I have never met one of them. So it's a new experience for me and an opportunity to have them share their thoughts and thinking of how this city is going to grow and the county and the surrounding areas, because it isn't just Charlottesville anymore. And people are coming in from a tremendous distance. I'd like to just to open up the discussion here, and that's what it's going to be. It's not a case of a debate, but a discussion. And that is the years that I've seen that have gone along in terms of the development. Who are we really planning for? Are we planning for those of us in the room tonight or the generations to come? And how do you look at it? How can you make a decision as to how much you can accommodate bringing into an area with all the other facilities that have to be provided? So I bring this up because a planning commission, which I was a part of at one time, and the other bodies are more susceptible to the people who come up and testify as opposed to those who can't because they're not here yet. Do any of you have any thoughts on this in terms of your own planning? Because you're all involved in this one way or another, and I'm sure you probably have thoughts on it.
The first speaker is Morgan Butler of the Southern Environmental Law Center.
Well, Maury, I want to thank everyone that came tonight for showing up. As Jay mentioned as he came in, it's more about quality than quantity. So I hope you guys will find this presentation enjoyable, and thank you for coming. In response to your question, who are we planning for? Is it for people in this room today, the folks that are currently alive and living here? Is it for people that are moving to this community into the future and obviously have not yet arrived? I think the answer is both. I think the essence of planning is just that. You're setting patterns in place that are going to impact the way a place develops in the future. But I don't think there can be any denying that the decisions we make today have an immediate impact as well. So it's really both. I think that's just the short and quick answer.
The next speaker is Frank Cox, president of the Cox Company.
I think when Thomas Jefferson moved to town that he was thinking of you and me and our grandchildren as far as the horizon that you should take for planning, particularly land use planning. And I think Jefferson set a wonderful example in how he began to establish patterns of integrated land use and transportation in and around the Charlottesville-Albemarle area. I do not look at planning as a conceptual way of doing things that's set in concrete. There's always been criticism within government that from one board of supervisors to another, from one city council to another, that a prior councilor or a prior board really wasn't smart enough to plan for the future. I think if we hang our hat on that precept, we're ultimately all going to be losers. Planning is certainly a dynamic process, and I think as the evening unfolds, we'll have a chance to talk about whether or not you can constrain growth, whether you can set population limits, whether you should expand growth area boundaries. How does that fit? Are we any different from the way planning is done in any other country? Do we benefit from being a democracy? So I think there's so many things to talk about, and hopefully we can get on with that.
We got a room here.
areas that you work with in other parts of the state? I think you've been involved in about three or four states. Have you seen anything substantially different?
Well, we've been blessed over the years to work in about 100 communities up and down the East Coast, and our work is split between the public and the private sector. My background is in urban planning, architecture, and engineering, and was a product of the University of Virginia, and our practice has been going for the last, 35 years, since 1972. So over the years, we've had a chance to really make a mess of things on one project or another and try to do a little bit better on the next. And for me, it's been decades of growth and trying to understand how to do things better. And I think as we look at how the states and the communities interact with each other, for example, Pennsylvania has a different way of enabling its planning statutes than Virginia does. If you look from state to state, just about all of the states, particularly all the Commonwealth states, have adequate enabling statutes to give local government the ability to do smart growth. We don't need to add a whole lot to it. There's some who postulate that we need to set population caps or we need to set growth area boundary caps and hang on to those forever. You know, I believe that that way of thinking really belongs, in a kind of a New England prep school mentality. You know, they're prep schools where they'll never go beyond 400 kids come hell or high water. I'm not sure that you can apply that same way of managing growth to an organic area. So I believe that in the state of Virginia, we have some wonderful growth management measures. The difficulty lies in the body politic as it's applied at the local level. We see that interjurisdictional squabbles, the lack of ability to get people on the same page to have an open and honest dialogue, oftentimes leads to subpar projects. And at the end of the day, what our overall goal should be, both as practitioners and citizens and educators, is to try to show the next generation how to plan a little bit better. But I think we have the tools now. We just need to teach and create a political and growth management mechanism that understands that everything is not political. And one of the problems that we see in this area is that a lot of small-minded, myopic decisions are made on a day-to-day basis that come in around the edges of land use and transportation decisions that ultimately result in a lower quality product. Since Albemarle County has had zoning for the last 50 years, my opinion is that the quality of architecture, the quality and the value of real estate for a considerable portion of that period has not improved significantly. Some of the greatest neighborhoods that we have in Charlottesville and Albemarle were implemented long before zoning ordinances were ever conceived of.
Next to speak is Jack Marshall, president of Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population.
I was worried because I agreed with virtually everything both of you said up until the, and it's no fun if we all agree, up until the prep school analogy. The question was, who are we planning for? Are we planning for those of us who are here now or generations down the line? And let's get right to a couple essential points. The sustainability, it was the essence of the discussion. And a common definition and a simple one of sustainability is simply meeting the needs of the present generation, that is those of us who are here now, without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. Well, that implies that the answer to Maury's question is we're planning both for those of us who are here now and those in the future. We have to think of both, and it's naive to have it either or. But in planning, we've got to start revisiting some of the old myths and revising them. One of them that has guided planners in America for generations is that growth is good. And we accept that. Growth is good. Well, it's not always good. it's good up to a point. In virtually every community, there are advantages brought by increasing people, by a richer economy. But there's a threshold at which the costs of growth exceed the benefits. And America has had the good fortune to have almost unlimited frontiers and be able to expand and grow forever. And we never have really had to face, like European countries, for example, or India or Java, that there are limits to growth. And only now are we beginning to bump up against those limits. And so let me answer Maury's question by saying that if we take sustainability seriously, if we are morally committed to being stewards of our own community, then we recognize an obligation to identify an optimal size, an optimal sustainable size for a community, and to work together to achieve that and stay at it, and then to revise it down the road. It won't be the same forever. As values change and technology changes, in another 10 or 20 years, think about it again. But without doing that, we grow either by accident or at the whim of those who profit from growth.
The final speaker on the panel is Stephen Blaine, an attorney for LeClaire Ryan and a member of the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce's Board of Directors.
Thank you. I would also again thank everyone for turning out. I think that the way to start this is, the way you've started this is right for planning. Who are we planning for? And I brought some, I actually gave a similar talk earlier this week, so I pulled together some data about Albemarle County and some of the growth projections. And I know Jack is quite familiar with this information, and some of it is actually projected on some bar charts back there. But we need to take a look at what the growing population makeup is for planning in this community. We need to open our eyes and see what the trends are. And the trends aren't necessarily intuitive. I think when we were talking before this program started, Jack, we were comparing our community to Loudoun County, which I think we would all, if we're familiar at all with that area, would agree is not a pace or rate of growth that we would want to try and tackle in this community. In fact, in this community, over the last 30 years in Albemarle County, the rate of growth has declined. The highest rate of growth for Albemarle County was actually in the 1970s. Where we were experiencing close to 4% annual growth. And since then, in the 90s, it tapered off closer to 2%, and now we're actually projecting growth for the next decade at slightly less than 2%, which I think, you know, when you've lived here long enough, you see the new houses going up, the new buildings, it's kind of counterintuitive that the pace and rate of growth has actually been declining. What is the demographic of the community? You know, 75% of the new population in Albemarle County last year was in migration, people who have moved here from somewhere else. And that's been consistent with the trend, I think, for the last maybe 10 years, between 25% and 35% is people having babies, natural population increase. But most of it predominantly is people moving here. What is the age demographic in our community? The fastest growing age bracket in our community is 55 and over. The average age in our community is close to 38 years old. Statewide, it's in Virginia, it's about 37. If you compare that to very rapidly growing communities where there is a increasing job base, like Loudoun County, the average age is 32. And you go to places like Austin, Texas, we've heard some speakers trying to compare our community. Is it more like Austin or is it more like Aspen? Austin, Texas, and Texas generally has a very young average age. And it's important to understand that when we're making planning decisions. How many people in this room have school-age children in public schools? The superintendent of schools I met with recently remarked that the percentage population in Albemarle County who have school-age children has gone from 28% to 25% just in the last 5 years. We see that as a continuing trend. The good news is for the community is that as a community we value public education, but it'll be interesting to see what the trends will be and what the attitudes will be if that demographic trend continues. So I think, you know, in these decisions about growth, and I want to talk more about this later because I see you have a question about the response to growth, smart growth strategy. You know, is it working? And my theme tonight is for Albemarle, I don't believe it is working. So I'll maybe leave it at that and as a segue to a possible another question.
Steve's obviously more prepared than I am tonight by having brought in notes, but I just want to caution folks against taking comfort in the fact that our rate of growth may be decreasing, because although the rate may be dropping from 4% to 2%, as the overall numbers of people in the county increase, then the percentage of growth each year may go down, but we're actually getting more people each year. And I think everyone in this room can look out around us and see the impacts that the growth is having on our community. One of the questions tonight was, or the question we opened up with, is really whom are we planning for and what is sustainability? And Jack offered a definition. The definition I would offer is very simple. What is sustainable growth? I would say in the context of Albemarle County and Charlottesville, it's a pattern of development and a rate of development that helps us preserve the characteristics of this area that make it such a wonderful place to live. And it seems to me that just driving around, you can see that the growth is having impacts. It's really undermining a lot of the qualities that make this such a great place to live. Congestion is getting worse. Our water supply, our rivers and streams are getting dirtier. We just had to basically come up with a new plan for our 50-year water supply as folks come into town. And I think the whole point tonight, or much of the point of the conversation tonight, will be whether or not smart growth is working. And that's an interesting position that Steve takes. And I guess my immediate response to that would be that smart growth, a lot of the policies that Albemarle County has put into place to try to usher smart growth in are really just now beginning to take effect. We've had the neighborhood model for some time, but we still have yet to see more than one or two developments that really embody what I think the neighborhood model is supposed to be about, in terms of compact, dense development with a livable community center that invites people to walk and to bike there, as opposed to everyone having to get in their car to drive to fulfill every need. So I think it's much too early to say that smart growth isn't working. It's just now getting, hopefully it's just now getting to a point where it's going to reach a critical mass and go forward from here.
I'd like to respond not yet to the smart growth comment, because I'm eager to hear why you think it's not working. We may even agree. But I want to bring up a heretical point. The very title of our debate, sustainable growth, is an oxymoron. When we're talking about growth of a population in a finite area, it cannot grow to meet the needs of the present generation without compromising the ability of future generation to meet their own needs. Growth cannot go on forever. And that's a truth that's hard for us to accept, because we have bought into that forever. So when we talk about sustainable growth, and Morgan brought this up, I just don't think that's a viable concept, and we have to start thinking about not growing forever and sustainably, but finding a point at which we no longer grow.
Don't you think it's really unfair that these two guys brought notes? We don't have any notes here. I think in an area where I totally agree with Jack is that smart growth can work. My concern is that because of the way that we've infused politics and planning and the way we've failed to integrate the laws and the statutes that are available to us to do those sort of things in an intelligent fashion, we have idiotic growth. And again, I reference the fact that prior to the implementation of zoning in Albemarle County, we had some very smart communities. in the Blue Ridge area. Blue Ridge Street is probably one of the most elegant, neighborly streets in all of America. It's the place where you'd want to have your kids grow up. But over the years, we've adopted this idea that we need to do smart growth, and then we've spent too much time philosophizing on how we're going to do it and not enough time in, on coming up with real-time, real-world mechanisms to actually help implement smart growth. And what we see today in so many communities, and I'm afraid that, that Charlottesville is one of those, is that we become overly impressed with our own intellect in approaching incremental planning decisions that we miss the big picture. Again, we have the ability, if we want to make a decision to set a population limit, we have the ability to do that in the state of Virginia under our current enabling statutes. My thesis is that there's nobody in the state of Virginia at the local political level that has the chutzpah and the testosterone, if they happen to be boys, to implement the types of local land use decisions necessary to do that. We just don't do it. We have the ability to do comprehensive plans. If you're going to be smart in doing comprehensive plans, you do a lot of work to prepare for it, just as a homemaker does a lot of work to prepare for an elegant Easter dinner. You just can't expect everyone to come to the table without that preparation having taken place. You just simply can't pray your way through and to a good dinner. What we have in the planning world is a disconnect. While we have state enabling statutes that allow us to do and make the decisions that are necessary to, I don't agree with Jack in setting precise population limits, but I do think that we need to, from a comprehensive planning standpoint, understand better the capacity of the land. What will the land hold? But backing up from that, when we do comprehensive plans, we need to have a vision, just as you did in your business and just as we have in our own professions. We have a vision statement for what we do. A comprehensive plan's initial charge is to come up with the overall vision for a community, to set its goals and objectives, and to work their way out from there. Albemarle County has been intellectually dishonest with itself for the last 50 years. They have indicated that they wanted to have a strong rural preservation, conservation motif that surrounds the elegant Jeffersonian ambience that we have here in this greater area. But if you ever fly into the Charlottesville Albemarle Airport, you'll see that that's an outright farce, because as you fly over our rural areas, they're just completely chopped up with little 1, 2, and 3 acre subdivisions. The reason that happened was back in the late 60s, early 70s, our Board of Supervisors did not have the political strength, the internal strength to actually make decisions to implement their own goals. If you want to have rural preservation, then you set zoning rules for your rural areas that cause the sustainability of the rural countryside. At the same time, we didn't have the foresight to integrate planning for water, sewer, cable television, roads, storm drainage, things of that sort, within the designated growth area. And as a result, developers have had a tendency to work towards the least common denominator. That common denominator is one of taking the developer's mission statement being, let's get by with the thing that can make us the most money with the least amount of stress, so I don't have to yell at my kids when I go home at night. So what we have up and down the Route 29 corridor, for example, there's probably no more poorly planned a corridor than what we have from the Charlottesville bypass all the way out to 29 North. And, you know, and for the effort that Places 29 is undertaking right now, they should be commended. I'm just afraid on that we're, in many instances, a day late and a dollar short. And as I've come to find in my own individual negotiations on individual projects up and down the corridor, there's little or no intestinal fortitude at the local level to actually do the types of things necessary to make, say, a Places 29 project come about.
Are you saying that
I agree with you, but I want to know where you stand. The community back in 1980 did have a lot of guts when it downzoned, it rezoned in an effort to protect the South Fork Rivanna watershed. And it really took guts for them to change the zoning. And they did it, and they created different zoning, much more dense zoning in growth areas and a rural area, a huge rural area, 95% of the county. Now, I agree that today they don't have the guts, but I think they should, and I want to. I think they should downzone significantly because, interestingly, we don't know what is the potential growth in Albemarle County. Nobody has ever sat down and tallied up the development potential on every plot that is, and every plot is zoned, added those up and said, holy, we can triple or quadruple or whatever our population size. Nobody's done that.
Well, Jack, that's the precise point I'm making, is that in the comprehensive planning process that we're enabled to do at the local level, that should be the very first thing
good.
A local planner
agree,
should do.
Then we agree on that, and we should be pushing local government to do it. The best estimate is Jeff Werner at PEC, and he says he's not sure 3 or 4 or 5 times the current size. But, Frank, my question is not just should we push them to identify the build out potential today, but are you saying that you think it should, we should downzone and we should lower the development potential in Albemarle County?
I think we should have done it 30 years ago.
That's not my question.
I am not sure that we have the overall political and governmental strength to do it successfully.
That's also not my question. Not whether we, do you think we should do it?
Actually, I don't. Yeah, actually, I don't. Jack's to the left of Michael Moore, and I'm to the right of Attila the Hun when it comes to land use politics. But my concern at the local level, and the reason I say no, let's not do it today, is probably for a different reason than what you think my reason might be, is that I think we've already mucked up the works in the rural area. You complimented the county years back on having establish good rural conservation zoning. The only thing that's rural about our rural zoning ordinance is the name of the zoning district. They call it, what, rural agriculture? If you have 26 acres, you can chop it up into 5 2-acre lots and have another 21-acre lot
that
left
was
over.
A quarter century ago.
But that's
pretty,
not a rural lot.
That was pretty far-sighted a quarter century ago, and now we know more, and the dynamics of growth are different. We're living in a qualitatively different space as a result of the quantitative growth, and that's what we've got to get our arms around.
So if we use Morey's definition of smart growth, that there's many definitions, but if one would be to designate where we wish growth to happen and designate areas where we want to, and I'll use disincentive because I'm all about incentives, then we're failing. That's my thesis, and I've got the grades to show it. Last year, there were 500, sadly for the building industry, there were 575 home starts last year in 2006, which is down from previous years, but 46% of those house starts were in the rural area, and only 54%. So we're down, we're getting less than a passing grade by most, I think, school standards. And that's been a trend. We had some rapid delivery of apartment units. That helps boost up the numbers because you're likely to find that multi-housing in the growth areas. But really, it's been the trend for the last 5 years where increasingly the relative percentage of growth is in, ironically, where we say we don't want it to happen. And so that's really what I was referring to. And I don't think, and I think Morgan's right, there are some policies and tools that perhaps have not had an opportunity to take effect or the impacts. But I would maintain that just coming up with new tools is not so much important as providing the incentives for the growth to occur in the right places. And I maintain, because I do it as a business, I live it every day, that if you couldn't come up with a script for a more disincentivized process than the zoning process in the growth areas. And I'm not talking about projects of residential in the rural areas where we're trying to preserve, but actually where we say We want to have growth. It can be anywhere from a 2-year to 6-year process in a zoning action. And so if you look at the numbers of creating new lots, last year there were 534 new lots created. That's new inventory for potential houses to accommodate growth. Almost 50%, 49% of those were in the rural area. So if you're looking at over 200, maybe 300 lots a year coming, being created, subdivided in the rural area, a 6-year process, during that period of time, you've allowed, over 1,000 lots to happen in the rural area. In the time that it takes to get a project that's supposed to be where we want to have the growth occur. So that's really kind of where I see it. And I think, as Frank said, developers are real easy to predict. Our clients, our customers, they will go where the path of least resistance is. And there are a lot of developers who are very community-minded who are really against almost a tide to do the right thing for the community because there's really no incentive to do it. You know, if anybody in a pickup truck can come down and file a rural subdivision plat and put houses in the country, which I think is what Jack and Morgan referred to as some of our valuable resources are in the rural areas, then we've got our incentives upside down.
I would very much agree with Steve that the way the process works right now, we unfortunately disincentivize, if that's a word, developers from coming in and putting the new units in the growth area. However, we have to keep in mind that if the strategy of guiding growth into the growth areas is going to work, the growth areas really do have to be attractive, appealing, vibrant places to live. The infrastructure has to be in place to handle the growth there. So it's important that as these things are going through the rezoning process, we get it right, that we look into some of the issues that we forgot about 30 years ago with sewer infrastructure and the like. It's important that the roads are going to be paid for to handle that. It's important that we start putting in the seeds for transit. I get somewhat alarmed when I hear calls to more balance the incentives, and the solution that's proposed is to make it easier to develop in the growth area. I think a more appropriate solution would be to make it harder to develop in the rural area. And I think this is what Jack and Frank were getting at. And I think there are tools that are available to us. Some of them are rather new in terms of the TDR. That was not something that was available to us before. And then there's just the flat-out downzoning. But again, I agree with Steve's point, but we have to be careful. The way we tip that balance is not to make it easier to develop one place necessarily, but we also have to make it harder to develop where we don't want the growth to go.
I think there have been some good comments. Let me correct a couple things. I believe, too, that developers are working within the system, most of them, and it's the system that needs correcting. I agree, Frank said, that we're missing the big picture, and I want to go back to the big picture because we can get so tied up on the trivia, and that's diverting, like whether we're growing at 2.1 or 2.15% a year. That's not important. We are growing, and we're doubling in 30 or 35 years. I also want to point out that ASAP doesn't argue that we should have a precise population limit. That's not feasible. We're talking about rough ranges, and I think that is feasible. I want to go back to smart growth, the big picture, because that seems to be our fallback position. The question is smart growth working or not, and why not? And the answer is it ain't working because it is nothing but an accommodation to growth. Smart growth doesn't stop growth. Smart growth says the growth that's coming should go there and there. Smart growth asks where and how growth should occur. It doesn't ask whether it should occur. And the smart growth strategy allows growth to continue there and there and there, and then we expand the growth areas a little bit and there and there and there, and never asks whether or not we are exceeding an optimal size for the community. And that's why I'm dubious about putting all our eggs in the smart growth basket. And I challenge all of you up here, and I'll take the challenge too. If you do not believe that growth should stop voluntarily by the democratic operation of the stakeholders in a community, then what do you see in the future for our community? We have 130,000 people now. Do you want us to be Manhattan, or do you want us to stop short of that because we've run out of water, or because it's so damned unattractive that none of us want to live here and people stop coming in? What do you see if you don't want a voluntary, democratic cap on growth? What do you see happen? And not in 20 years. Planning, as I said before this meeting, long-term planning in most localities consists of thinking about next Thursday. Our community is going to be here longer than 20 years from now, and probably longer than 50 and 100 years. What do you guys see as the population, as the character of our community then?
I want to bring one point here, and that is the question of looking at population growth and looking at all the things that have happened in the past that we've been able to learn by. The thing that strikes me is that for corridor development, it won't be sustained because of the problems of cost, but it seems the society has to acquire more land for the future in these corridors that are very appropriate for rapid transit. You can't wait till the development has occurred, and it's too late. Even going taking a look at Crozet, one would say, well, nobody's ever going to live in that corridor of Crozet going out there. Well, that's just not true. There will be growth, but the question is, if we don't put our hands on the obtaining of land, how can we expect to control the problem of the traffic? There are a lot of things that are out there will work. They're not working here. All we have is big buses running around with nobody on them. It's granted, some of these people can't own a car. They don't have the money to own it. But I think that this is a very, very serious problem, and I don't know how you solve it. Probably you folks do.
The premise of, I think, Jack, your question is, I think what we're really talking about is our quality of life. I think that, most people would agree with you that they would equate, more people as perhaps intruding on our quality of life. But I'm kind of looking at our community. I wasn't here in 1950, but we were only 26,000 in population. And I would like to maybe hear somebody articulate how the quality of life was better in 1950 than it is today. We had a segregated community in 1950. Live birth rates, health, the general health of the community is probably safe to say it's better now than today. Maybe our streams are not as pure, but we would hope that we can cure that because we are smart enough to do that. So I would agree with the approach that, institutions like the Southern Environmental Law Center have to try and bring that back. But I think that's really what people are talking about is quality of life, and I don't necessarily equate population with quality of life. I wouldn't choose to live in New York City in Manhattan, but an awful lot of people do, and an awful lot of people believe they have a very high standard or quality of life. So I think that's really the premise. And I think the other thing that you find in the face of your argument is that in almost every segment of our life, we equate growth with health. Plants, humans, if they stop growing, then they cease to be healthy. I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't strive as a goal to try and come up with a sustainable growth, because a sustainable growth for any of those is a healthy growth. But I just think that's what you're facing when you're making these arguments.
Before the rest of you answer my challenge of what kind of future do you see in terms of population, let me just follow up your metaphor, because it's great. There is a time to grow, and if a child stops growing, we worry. But if I continue to grow, now my wife starts to worry.
There is a point at which growth becomes dysfunctional, to follow your metaphor. You picked the wrong one, Steve. There is an optimal size for me and probably for you and for a community. Growth beyond an optimal point is cancer.
Jack, I've known you for a while, and I've known you to grow, and the evidence of that, each time I see you become smarter, more wise. So in the metaphoric sense, you continue to grow every day.
Well, I go back to the point that we need to implement a vision, because if our vision, as you're concerned with, is to become a Manhattan, that we will become a Manhattan one of these days. What my fear is, though, is that we don't have the leadership to hang on to describe, to carry out that vision, to inculcate it in not only us, you know, over 50s sitting around the table. You're over 50. You're what, in 30s still? But, you know, we need to inculcate that vision into, you know, a new generation that's coming. You know, if we truly appreciate what Albemarle County is, then we need to teach about it and preach about it. We don't do that. But in the rural area, I think we're intellectually dishonest. If we want to go back to our comprehensive plan and the way it's described right now, and then translate it into a zoning ordinance that would bring about the actual precepts that are articulated for rural area growth, we would implement a zoning ordinance, a new zoning district for the rural area that would have one unit per 50 acres, maybe one unit per 100 acres. We might allow granny apartments or granny flats or a little cottage on that 100 acres along with the principal residential dwelling. But having 21 acre zoning or the ability to do 2-5 2-acre lots if you have a 10 acre parcel in the rural area is a intellectually dishonest way of dealing with rural area growth. And the reason we have that is not because of any great advancement in planning by our Board of Supervisors. That was a compromise position. 30 years ago, they were talking about 50-acre zoning, 100-acre zoning. I just spent, about 2 years ago, I worked with Nelson County, just to the south of us, for about 9 months, and they hired us to write a zoning ordinance. And they said, we've just adopted the comprehensive plan. Come help us design a zoning ordinance that will implement the comprehensive plan. And I did. I took that challenge literally, and I proposed rural area zonings of, you know, 1 to 50 acres, 1 to 100 acres. It was a gradation using the Clark County approach. But I came close to being run out of town. After I presented it to a room that was a little fuller than this, we met at the new Nelson County High School. There were 400 people who came out the evening. I was stuck up there as the sacrificial lamb to present the new zoning ordinance. The chairman of the Planning Commission didn't even bother to show up for the meeting, and the Board of Supervisors sat over in a corner and scowled at me all night, but they wanted the public to see what a zoning ordinance would look like that actually implemented their vision. They had a beautiful vision. Their plan was a corroboration between a local citizens planning committee, their planning commission, and the planning district commission in this area. It said all of the right things. It described the rural area as it sits now in Nelson County. But when it came to the whole issue of extracting any property rights from the people in the rural area, they wouldn't have anything to do with it. Even when it came to implementing a zoning district to affect what they desired to have as a growth area, such as a Crozet's growth area, they had selected two or three areas in Nelson County where they were willing to accommodate growth. When I proposed the ordinances that would allow that to happen, they swallowed hard and said, well, that's way too much density. I tried to weave back to them exactly what they said in their comprehensive plan. They said, well, maybe we didn't need that. Maybe we didn't really mean to say that. So when you do planning and when you do zoning, they're inextricably linked. And oftentimes it's not until you get out in public and the bright lights are turned on our legislators that you find that people have a tendency to cave when it comes to implementing a vision. I think the vision a lot of us have for Albemarle County is the vision that we thought we first gained when we first moved here. I moved here in 1965 to start college and came back after working in the more urban areas in 1972 and raised our four kids here. But, you know, I still think of Charlottesville as a 1965 type of area. It's because my area of geographical maneuverings is pretty much relegated to a fairly small sphere that hasn't changed all that much.
Well, I grew up in Fairfax in Northern Virginia, and growing up as a kid, we had just acres and acres of woods behind our house, and one of the things that was so great about my childhood was just being able to, they were publicly owned, but just being able to go out and enjoy that. And I think, honestly, one of the reasons I've become involved in environmental law is because every time I came home from college, more and more sections of that forest had been removed until finally it was just subdivisions stacked up next to where I'd grown up. And that is part of the reason, having come here for college and for law school, one of the things I love most about this community is you have the vibrant downtown. You've got these communities nearby in downtown, but it's so easy to escape all of a sudden and find yourself in the beautiful rural areas. And I would say that although, yes, as you fly in, there definitely are piecemeal chopping up of some of the best farmlands and forests that we have, there's still great treasures that lie out there. And I don't want to write off the rural area as a lost cause. My vision for the future of this area would be a continuing functional downtown that manages to maintain its historic charm, that still centers around a focal point of the downtown mall where people of all different ethnicities and income levels can mingle. And then as you start to move out, you get into the growth areas, and they're similarly sort of independent communities, but also that tie into the downtown area. But as you move further out, you get less and less density until you're getting to the point where we have viable and functioning farms, where we have forests that are intact and serve as valuable habitat for all sorts of different species. So that would be my vision. I think, quite honestly, I think what Jack is proposing in terms of looking at what the land can sustain, and there's so many different variables that go into that, and I don't know how you prioritize them, but I think it's a very legitimate planning exercise. I think, as Jack has pointed out before, right now our comprehensive plan does essentially set a population limit. It's just not one that anyone thought through. It's one that we arrived at after we put zoning in place. So I guess that's my vision. But my question would be, really for Frank, I'm enjoying listening, and I agree with you that we're somewhat intellectually dishonest if we think that we're going to be able to just come out and downzone the rural areas. I'm just curious, do you have your knowledge is greater than mine. I'm wondering what you would propose that we could somehow clamp the gates down and make sure that we preserve what I referred to before as the treasures that do still exist there.
It's a bitter pill to swallow. What you do at the local level when we've gotten to the point we are now, and we find that those of us, particularly across the board here, that come from different perspectives on things, pretty much come to the same conclusion. We kind of like Charlottesville and Albemarle just the way it is. We wish it could stay exactly how it is. The bitter pill is that we elect legislators that do nothing. We've had a bunch of those in place for a long time. Our Meadow Creek sewer line down the hill here was put in 55 years ago. I've spent the last 7 years trying to get Albemarle Place, which is about as smart a growth project in both a contextual sense from a regional as well as a site-specific sense has ever been proposed in Albemarle County. It's taken us 7 years to get through the planning and the zoning process, and we only discovered the week before Christmas that the Meadow Creek sewer line, which has been in the ground for 55 years, was overflowing and there was absolutely no capacity left. So there's going to be a very extensive, time-consuming, expensive process of upgrading what's going to be a $15 million sewer line, just in order that Albemarle Place, as well as anything else that happens along the 29 corridor, can come about. For some, that's a good idea. I mean, if we really don't want to see the character of the community change, then we stop providing any enhanced levels of service. It really comes down to supply and demand. I'm getting to the age where I have to worry about physical problems. And a couple years ago, I had a little heart episode with clogging up of the arteries, and the only way that it could be fixed biologically was doing an intervention to prop open the arteries, to stick in a stent, or if it gets any worse, you have to do a bypass. Should we talk about a bypass around Charlottesville? The problem is that if you have arterial sclerosis, ultimately things will reach a point of stabilization for a while, and as long as you don't try to be too energetic, as long as you don't try to be too progressive in a static situation, you'll probably continue to breathe for a while. But at a certain point, the arterial sclerosis hits the point of no return and things go pop. My concern for this area is that we have roads. We have one road in and out of town in each direction. We have sewer lines that our local governments have been irresponsible in planning for the upgrades for 30 years. The Meadow Creek line should have they should have been saving their money to upgrade that line as long ago as 25 years ago when they knew that some problems were there. So I guess the bitter pill is that if you don't do anything, then maybe during yours and my lifetime, that could be 20, 30, 40-year span, things will kind of seem as they are today.
Which is a false perception, of course, because they are changing. Let me say a couple things. First, Frank suggested that I was a lefty, and I am in a lot of ways. But what I'm proposing to you this evening is very conservative. It's eminently conservative, and it surprises me that conservatives don't glom onto this and say, yeah, we like things the way they are. We have a right to maintain our quality of life, and we have a moral obligation to protect our environment, and this is the way to do it. Secondly, I want to point out that none of you, even my, I think the guy that came the closest is Morgan, answered my question about what kind of population do you see with this inexorable growth that just, you know, one more little road here and we don't want to do anything too radical, but it is death of our community by a thousand cuts. And at some point we've got to step back and say, that's not the way to do it. Finally, we've talked about downzoning and the pain of it, and Frank is quite right that when the rubber hits the road, this room would be filled with irate folks who, and we haven't used the word yet, complain about we are taking their property rights. And that's the essence of the problem of actually implementing any enlightened, progressive, effective effort to protect our community. And I just want to point out here that it's interesting that the folks who most object to property rights being taken away never say boo when they were upgraded, when they were given more property rights, or when the value of their land was enhanced hugely because of new roads or better schools that they didn't pay for themselves directly. I think we've got to start rethinking what it means to take property rights. We've got to just step back. And, Frank, you mentioned that, you know, we're not looking at the big picture. This is all part of the big picture. And it may require that we in America look at a different way at property rights if we genuinely are going to create sustainable communities. Another alternative is to say, to hell with sustainability. It's a myth. We can't do it. And let's keep growing forever and screw future generations.
I have a question that I want to raise on both aspects. You're going to react to where do we go with the facilities? Do they sit and wait till the development comes in when the cost is much greater? how do you plan for these things that you know you're going to have in time, just don't know whether it's a 5-year or a 10-year period. And we've always filled these things in after the development came in many cases.
I don't believe local planning will ever be successful unless our local leadership is more progressive and taking the first step towards establishing where utilities, infrastructure, public facilities are going to go. If you're going to control growth, you have to have the upper hand. If you provide, let's say, for example, that you do establish a critical growth area boundary, you set a population limit, in order to resist the challenge, it's a legal challenge as much as anything else from the private sector community, if you're going to establish those areas for growth and population limits, then you have to make up your mind you're going to serve those areas. So in a certain sense, you know, in a democracy and the way government has been handed down to the local level as far as their responsibility, the government is responsible for infrastructure, from sewer lines all the way through schools. And we've been playing, in Virginia in particular, over the last 50 years, catch-up ball. We're always a little bit behind the eight ball, and the main reason goes back to vision. We have no vision. We don't know how to translate vision into practical implementation steps. We're reluctant to call a spade, and to put into place taxes, and to put into place developer fees. They call them proffers, cash proffers in Virginia. So it's a bit of a problem. If we don't have at the local governmental level enough, if we haven't done enough homework, if we haven't been to the gym enough, if we haven't pumped iron enough to get to a point where we can puff up our chest and say, this is exactly how we want our community to look, then my opinion is local government doesn't deserve the right to impose growth limits. And I think there's a kind of a moral, a philosophical, you know, even a spiritual issue that transcends this argument, and that's, you know, whether or not we're more concerned with people than we are with cows. I mean, if we downzone in the rural area arbitrarily without having made good decisions based on real thoughtful planning processes, if we overly restrict our urban areas and just because of meanness in some case, which we see in politics, we restrict the amount of people that can go into an urban area, then, you know, what am I to say to my daughter when she comes back from graduate school and wants to live here? You know, you're one person over the growth limit that we've set. You know, what do we do? Does she, when she gets to her hair done, does she, you know, have her tubes tied? What about my boy that comes up to work for me over the summer? You know, should he get a vasectomy at the county line? You know, there's a point where implementation of growth retardants mechanisms comes right down to the personal level. So we have to look at it in a larger sense. Are we, what are we putting first? How are we prioritizing the whole set of issues? And I think all of us have our own priorities, but it's the responsibility of a good democratic local government to make good decisions, and we don't do that.
Look, it's getting on with the best of 9 o'clock. I wanted to be available, those of you that are here, all 500. If you would like to ask questions, go ahead and speak real loud.
I, for a long time, lived in Davis, where about half of the township was considered to be basically what we call a rural area. And as you might imagine, we also had the town hall full and the parking lots full of people standing there with pitchforks, threatening this. And they came up with $10 million to purchase development rights from those people. They had a system of transferable development rights as well. They were 13,000 in population, basically one-tenth of our area. So, accordingly, it'd be $100 million for this area to come up with a similar purchase plan. And this is actually a more expensive area, so make that $140 million. That's the kind of commitment that it takes to have some type of development. And when they proposed their plan, it was considered, I think, one of the most radical in the United States, that they would consider having 50% fully kept rural. And we're talking about Carnegie 95, or maybe Slutsky's plan of only 94% in a rural area. This is a beautiful fantasy, I think. But I can almost guarantee you that you go through the courts, and if you want people to take a big down zoning and have a lot of money, they're going to have enough money to go to court. And you're going to have to purchase that down zoning. That's going to be expensive. That's a hard thing to sell people. But meanwhile, when I come here, I look at it, I think this whole county is in law. There is no way you're going to have 95%. You realize that Albemarle County, it was quoted in the paper by our police chief, that Albemarle County was three-fourths the state of size of the state of Rhode Island. Well, I looked it up. He was wrong. We're only 60% the size of the state of Rhode Island. But Albemarle County is 60% the size of the state of Rhode Island. It has a population over 1 million. And we don't think of Rhode Island as being a big, whole state as being a solid urban area. So it kind of shows you how much open space we've got here. And I mentioned it's great to go out and drive through the tree. I like the trees and farms much as anyway. But like I said, I think you're talking $150 million.
I'll tackle it if I can. I think your community had some bold leadership to be able to take that on and perhaps was of a size where it was manageable. But there are some techniques, and I know that David Slutsky is advanced one where we think it would be possible to compensate people for their development rights. It's going to take bold leadership. It's very innovative. It's very complicated. And again, just from my experience, these concepts are difficult to convey, and you have to be able to convey them in ways that will remove the threat and the fear and anxiety that new planning tools and techniques. But they have adopted transferable development rights in other areas of the country. And we probably have areas like outside Aspen, Pittman County, where we might look to see what their experience has been before we dive into it. But the concept would be that people could take the right to subdivide their land, their development right, in the rural area, and sell that to a property owner who lives in a designated growth area. I think that Supervisor Slutsky's idea is probably correct, that we probably need to expand the target area to be able to accommodate what we would hope would be a lot of sellers, because the objective would be to try and maximize the success of that concept into the growth area. And it would be just heaven for lawyers like me, because I could come up with a whole industry of how we would create a market for them, how we would securitize them, how we would record the transfer. I hope it happens, but it would take a lot of bold leadership. But there is a glimmer of hope, because people are prepared to talk about this.
Fairfax County, Loudoun County. I wish we could stay like Fauquier. I'd like to know what Fauquier is doing different than Culpeper County and Prince William County in terms of growth. I mean, day 28 is clogged up with the traffic from Culpeper coming north and from Prince William County going south. But moving from Prince William County just 2 years ago, my vision is the opposite. And I got into a real fight with a neighbor of mine who was on the county board of supervisors, and property rights ruled in Prince William County. And I remember a conversation I had with this particular supervisor at a gas station one day, and my comment to him was, have you lost your mind? In that corridor between Mint Hill and Gainesville on Route 28 and 29, that area. Hundreds and hundreds of acres, property rights ruled, and they got $1 million proffer for one turn lane, and that's all they got. And I really worry about what's happening to Albemarle just for one little tiny thing, and then it's that bridge in Advance Mills. Talk about planning. That bridge has been sitting there since 1948. God knows how long it sat where it was south of here. And now we're looking at a 2 to 6 year process to replace the bridge. And we talk about sewer pipes. I'm really afraid we're going to look like Prince William County because we're not planning. And the infrastructure wears out. What do we do? So how can we grow effectively over the years? Or at least maintain what's coming?
Well, the one reason that Fauquier County is essentially remain the same is that they've had a consistent leadership focus over the last 40 years. Their Board of Supervisors has pretty much from one board to the next, election to election, been of single mind and purpose in implementing a comprehensive plan that a far right-wing conservative drafted for them back in the very early 60s. A man named Rosser Payne, who lived in Fauquier County, showed them how to do planning right. He did all of the land use absorption studies and the capacity studies and the market studies, and they developed a plan that stuck, and it was the plan that really set the course for how some of the of us younger planners coming up began to learn about and to be really critical of other local governments and not doing planning right. So Fauquier has kind of held to their mission. And part of holding to that mission is that they haven't done anything. I mean, they haven't really done a whole lot as far as expanding infrastructure. You know, they built a few schools here and there, and, you know, they've accommodated growth within growth areas, but those growth areas have been very limited. And what you see now is that Fauquier has remained, hate to use the word pristine, it's not, but you're seeing growth jump over Fauquier to Culpeper. And the problem in Culpeper is that they've had a schizophrenic board from season to season, just as Loudoun County has. Loudoun County's political system has been an abject embarrassment for anyone that's concerned with appropriate and sensible local governance in the state of Virginia. They've swung like a pendulum from one election to the other. And, you know, you might as well write off Loudoun County. In Albemarle, we've had pretty much the same growth area boundaries for the last 25 years. Unfortunately, we've had zoning that has escaped the capsule of our planning area boundaries. Unfortunately, because that zoning was put into place because of private manipulation of the political system. Properties in Crozet, for example, were zoned to some level of density that really wasn't of a type of zoning that was consistent with what we would call today smart growth. For that reason, the Crozet area master planning effort that tons of money was spent on in recent years is going to be an abject failure because too many of the people that have vested interest there in ownership and property are just going to develop with the zoning that they already have in place, which is not necessarily consistent with the comprehensive plan.
No, I sense the four of us, men of goodwill, agree that we really want to keep Albemarle County nice. And while we would differ on what nice means, basically, we don't want to see it become a Loudoun or a Fairfax. What can we do? What can we represent different communities, different ideologies up here, but we all seem to want roughly the same thing for the county. How can we work together? How can we bring our constituencies together to reach the vision that we all recognize needs to be articulated and will serve to create a sustainable community. What can we do? Rather than just wring our hands and say, oh, woe is me, we're going to be Loudoun County.
I'm a little bit concerned about the strategy that I think, Frank, you may be suggesting, in that we just kind of stop supplying the infrastructure. Because I feel to a large extent, because of the funding inadequacies from the state, as well as the fact that up until a month ago, Albemarle County was content to accept about $3,000 as a per unit proffer in the growth area, and the fact that we, up until a few months ago, didn't even have authority to collect any type of fees for growth in the outside the growth area, in the rural areas. So, but yet at the same time, even though we haven't been able to put infrastructure in place, we're still seeing rezonings come in. I think Wayne Sillenberg, who's the head of the county planning department, at a joint meeting between the county and city planning commission earlier this month, said that at this point the county has already approved enough residential units to last for 10 years. The Southern Environmental Law Center, where I work, put out a report about this time last year looking at just the retail situation. And the retail that's either already been approved or is in the pipeline, meaning it's been submitted as an application for approval, is about somewhere between 2.5 to 3.5 times what the county's own officials say that we can expect to absorb in the next 10 years. And I think if you, as PEC, they've put together some figures that suggests that there have been some in the neighborhood of 17,000 units approved or in the pipeline. So one concern I have is that strategy, although it may not be an intentional one of not putting infrastructure in place to handle the growth, doesn't seem to be having much of an impact on thwarting or dissuading development proposals from coming in.
I think it's about time to close up shop here.
You're saved.
I tell you, they all thought when we got together beforehand, what are we going to talk about? I want to come off, but I don't. They say one thing, I'm disappointed there weren't more people here to listen to the four of these fellows talk. So I want to thank Stephen and Jack and Frank and Morgan, and I hope we give them a handle. Mm-hmm.